Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. In this episode, we speak to Phil, who with his wife and family became foster carers. He shares their story of fostering and how that then became a story of adoption. As always, it's Phil's story and reflects his views and experiences. We hope you enjoy it, and if you'd like to share your story, please get in touch through Facebook or Twitter.
Well, my name's Phil Watson. I live in Liverpool. Married, I've got three kids. I'm a teacher on a Monday and a Wednesday and a Friday. I teach in a local secondary school, teach languages and RE. And the rest of the week, I recruit foster carers for Liverpool City Council. And I'll do that. So we're chatting about this evening. I'll do it weekends, evenings, daytime, whenever I can.
Right. But what's your story, though? Because you've got, you're more than just a recruiter, aren't you?
Well, I suppose so. Our life, so me and my wife, we were chugging along relatively, should we say, an orthodox manner. So we had two kids. I was a full-time teacher, was a head of department. My wife was working at Liverpool City Council. And then a little bit, well, it felt like it was a little bit out of the blue. My wife said to me, have you ever thought about fostering? And I'd had it in my head that kids can't live with their mum and dad. I knew that some kids were in care. And I used to be a kids worker in Toxteth in Liverpool for a local, it was kind of like a church and a community group. And so there was a lot of kids in care there. And I just used to meet them and meet their foster parents or foster carers. And I knew kids couldn't always live with their mum and dad. And my wife was the driver, I think, behind it all. She said, well, look, there's an event going on at the council. They run them at, you know, it was a community centre. So we got a babysitter and we went off on a, you know, like date night. It was like that, only not at all romantic, except we did end up with extra kids. So maybe it was. And we went into this room and I'm not a shy person. I'm almost always the loudest person in the room. Sat down, tea, coffee, and then these three people sort of stood up and began to speak. And one of them was a social worker. And I must have met social workers before, but I didn't remember. I didn't really think much about it. And she started to talk and she was talking. And she's kind of, I don't know if this is true generally, she was using a language that I didn't really understand. For example, she kept talking about lacs. And I'm not shy, put my hand up. What is a lac? And she looks at me and goes, lac, L-A-C. And I'm like going, yeah, okay, LAC, what does that stand for? She went, looked after children. And I'm like, oh, right, so the kids are called LACs or LAC. She went, yeah, as if, you know, everybody knows that. And I thought, well, I don't. And my wife's sort of elbowing me, going, shut up, you're making a show. And I'm going, I don't really care. And you should be used to that by now. So we hadn't got off to a very good start, me and the social worker. I think the other people in the room were probably all glad that somebody was asking the questions. Just glad it wasn't them and it was me. Second person that I remember speaking was probably exactly what I thought a foster carer was like. So you know the story of the little old woman who lives in the shoe, got so many kids, she doesn't know where. This lady was a bit like that, and she was sort of saying, and I know people, you know, you might not know Liverpool well, but she basically said, I'm knackered. I'm really tired because last night me and the police were chasing around a bit of Liverpool called Litherland, looking for an absconded 14-year-old boy. And by the time I found him, with the police's help, got him back in the car and got him back to our house, I had to call the police again because the other teenage, it was a teenage girl who she was looking after, she'd got her boyfriend round and he was banned from the house because he was a convicted drug dealer, something like that. So I'm thinking, right, so you spent the night chasing a 14-year-old boy around, got home, and then had to get the police back to get a 16, 18, or I don't know, whatever, a drug dealer out of your house. I am really glad somebody fosters these kids. It is not going to be me, and it's not going to be in my house, because we are Mr. and Mrs. Ordinary in many ways. You know, we got Pebble Dash on our semi-detached. We got one of them compost bins. We had a couple of guinea pigs. We were just so like, nah, this is never going to happen. And it was, you know, I'm glad she did it, but I wouldn't do it. But the thing that changed my mind was the third person who spoke was like a 20-year-old, and she'd grown up in care. And she kind of, they should have just used her. She basically stared at us and went, can you imagine if a grown-up came up to you and said, you're coming, do you like it or not, and I'm going to take you to some strangers and I'm going to leave you at the stranger's house, and I don't know how long for, and I don't know if you can see your mom, and I don't know if you can take your stuff with you. You know, how would you feel? And, you know, as a grown-up, you go, well, I wouldn't go. I just go, I'm not going with you. And she said, you know, when you're a looked-after kid or a kid in care, you wake up in strangers' houses and there's strange noises, and you don't know where the toilet is, and you don't know how the shower and the bath works, and you don't know if you can go downstairs and make a cup of tea, and you can't even remember the names of the people that you met because you're just befuddled. And I just thought, yeah, if you go and stay at somebody's house, or, you know, even if when you go on holiday, the noise of the central heating or the plumbing wakes you up, what, how must it be if you're a little kid? And I knew this happened, but I'd never thought about it. And when we went home, me and my wife went, oh, there's a lot more here to think about than I ever had. And I'm figuring within a couple of weeks, coincidentally, our five-year-old, who's now 16, was going on a sleepover at his best friend's, who's called Dan. And I, you know, like all kids do this, don't they? You mean, so I said, all right, to my son, Jamie, get everything you think you need, get all your gear for the sleepover. You know, if you'll have done this as a child yourself, or you'll know somebody who's done it. It's so normal. And he basically brought everything he owned and put it in the hallway. And I went, what is all this? And he goes, oh, this is what I need for the sleepover at Dan's. And I said, and he bought every football top. And we were in Liverpool, okay? So he had every football top. He had Barcelona, Madrid. He had Liverpool and Everton. I don't know how he managed it. He had every top. He had his spare clothes. He had his pajamas. He had his duvet, his pillowcase, bag of sweets, Power Rangers. We shoved it all in the car, drove all the way over to where Dan lived, in a place called Old Swan. And it must be a 20-minute drive maximum. And all the way there, my son's nervous energy was coming forward about, oh, me and Dan, we're going to play football. Then we're going to watch The Voice. Then we're going to have a tea that Dan's mum has made for us, because Dan's mum is my wife's best friend and Dan's dad is my best friend. So this had been planned for ages. And Jamie knew exactly what he was going to go to. He knew the house. He knew the big sisters that lived there. He knew where the toilet was. He knew the plan. He knew he'd like the food. And when I dropped him off, he said, I said, oh, you have a great time. And he went, oh, yeah. But in the morning, you will come and get me, won't you? And he had that slight waver that you'd expect, wouldn't you, of going, yes, I will. I will come and get you. And if you get scared, you know, just tell Dan's mum and dad, I'll come and get you. And, you know, just so normal. And I went home and I just thought, he's got all his stuff. He's got everything that he's familiar with. He's only going for 12 hours, 18 hours, I don't know, one night. And he knows I'm going to get him. And he's five, so he's not a little kid. Still anxious, still nervous. And I just thought, that's normal. But what must it be like if you are that kid who's taken from what you know, which might be awful, might be horrific, but you know it, and you're taken to strangers? So me and my wife went, well, look, you know, and I do recruit foster carers for Liverpool City Council, but I'm not on commission. You know, they don't pay me by the scalp. and so we just said, look, let's apply, because the only thing that can happen is the council might say, we don't think you can foster. You're not the right people. Or, because it takes, what, 6-9 months maybe to go through the process, or we might just decide halfway through, we don't want to do it anymore, and we're not, and you're not going to make us take a kid, because that would be ridiculous. Or we might get approved, in which case we might have one of those kids arrive at our house, and, well, we'll do the best we can. We'll make sure that kid is as safe as can be, as happy as can be. And so we basically, and it's the same principle with every council, every agency, you ring up and say, hi, we're interested in finding out more about fostering. What happens next? I forget what your question was, but that's the start of an answer, isn't it?
Yeah, there was no question. Yeah, I'm just, you know.
Oh, I just go. Yeah, just talk.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, you're obviously a really strong advocate for foster care, and you're very good at articulating, you know, your journey. So, but what was that like, you know, that assessment process? Was it a time when you sort of reflected on, you know, what's this going to mean for us?
It's really nosy. Tell us about your family. Tell us about your own upbringing. Tell us about your relationship. Have you had other relationships that are meaningful and serious? How solid is your marriage? How do you get on with your kids? They interviewed our kids who were, at the time, 5 and 7. You know, what do you think about fostering? They wanted to see bank statements to see if we were financially stable. They wanted to know, so they wanted to know about friends that we'd have that would support us and help us and family. My dad used to visit quite often because he had business up in Liverpool. So they said, oh, if he's here regularly and he stays the night, we need to meet him and chat to him. And so you do feel quite vulnerable, but I think I understood it all. I understood that this was important because this isn't a 9-to-5, is it, where, you know, can you hold it together and do a decent job? It's like, no, what are you going to be like at 2 in the morning when a kid won't sleep and is possibly breaking your stuff and possibly telling you or somebody in your family that they don't like it very much living here? And they really like to go and live somewhere else. And they might not use that language. It might be a little bit more aggressive, possibly. And it is an interesting test of character, isn't it?
Yeah.
And to recommend somebody to foster is a very brave thing to do, because ultimately, until that little kid or big kid arrives in their house, you're not quite sure how they are going to respond to that scenario.
So what were you being approved for? Because you, as foster care,
we were being approved. So we were being approved. We wanted to foster. I think you get approved to foster kids between 0 and 18, but we just said, look, we want to keep the kids younger than our own two. Keep like a pecking order, if you like, the birth order. And we wanted to go short term. And I didn't know what is short term. Oh, it's 0 to 2 years. And whenever I've spoken to any other foster carers, it's one of the sort of big jokes about, oh yeah, 0 to 2 years, but it might be forever. Because, you know, I think many of us have been in a situation where a child has arrived and nobody's quite sure what's going to happen. And it might be a day or a week or 6 months or a year and a half, or it could be forever. You're just not sure. And you have to have that. There's three things we tend to have. If you look, and I know somebody did some Myers-Briggs analysis on us, you know, not like every foster carer, but we tend to be, we have a strong sense of justice. That comes up a lot. And we just go, that's not right. And we want to do something about it. We tend to be very relational. So we like kids, but we also, you have to deal, we know that social workers, you have to go to meetings at schools, you have to meet pediatricians, you have to do all these other things. So you have to be relational and you have to be flexible, which sounds like, oh, do you mean you can, you know, change your routine? It's like, yeah, it is change your routine, but it might be, can you change the way you do everything? Can you change the way you think about kids? So for example, I'm a school teacher a lot of the time. I've got two birth kids. I've been a youth worker. So I guess I'd always, and I've been raised in the way that once you've got a relationship with somebody, there's a kind of carrot and stick approach, you know, like just do what you're told and we'll all get on fine. And then I've encountered through being a foster carer and subsequently an adopter, sometimes you have to completely turn that on its head and you have to give a kid what they want there and then, which sounds so counterintuitive to me, or it did, but to prove that to prove to them that they can trust you. So it is currently, what is it today? September the 28th. We just bought our adopted son his Christmas present. And he got it today because, which is what we, 3 months early. Yeah, that's not so good, is it, in a way? But we know that if we were to say that to most people with a traditional family setup, like, oh, that's terrible, you're ruining him, he needs to learn delayed gratification, you're going to spoil him. But we knew that he can't actually cope with the intensity of Christmas anyway. The expectation just sends his adrenaline through the roof. And we know that by staggering it and saying, yeah, actually, we know you want that and we're going to buy it for you now, because we don't say because we love you, but we buy it for you now because then you go, all right, I trust you. And he's been with us 7 years and we still have moments. It's so much easier now than it was when we first were put together as a family, for want of a better expression. But he's learned to trust us. He knows that there's food in this house and he knows the safety in this house that he didn't trust. He didn't believe when he first arrived, and he was pushing our buttons and going, go on. The internal narrative of a kid that's been through what he's been through, which is like so many of our kids, even if they were very young when they were taken from birth family, which is, I am not good. I am no good. My mum and dad didn't want to look after me. They chose, I don't know, alcohol, heroin, whatever, rather than look after me. So their internal narrative is so negative that to undo that, you have to be unstinting in your love and patience and praise. And even when you get it thrown back at you, you have to get up again and go, I will be here for you. I will not leave you. It makes me emotional to think about it. It's like, I will not leave you. I will not forget you. I will not treat you badly or do whatever I can to make you know that you are valuable, you are important, you have a role that you don't have to feel bad about yourself. You're trying to build that sense of self-esteem all the time. And we used to have big battles about all sorts of things, bedtime, you know, waiting for the weekend.
And now it's around my story. You've it's like pinball trying to hold you down here. So I'm going to...
Good luck with that, yeah.
Yeah, I can see it's going to be a battle of where we're going with all this. But I was can I take you back? Because when we're talking your story, you're approved. Mm. And obviously we know the end now because you've given it away, but...
Sorry.
It's okay, don't worry. We'll fix it in the mix, I'm sure. Well, maybe not. What was it like then? You get approved and then one day someone phones you and says, right, we're on our way. We've got a child. Yeah. Or what's that experience like?
The adrenaline that I get from that is quite terrifying, but it's also a strange mix of exciting and terrifying. But I'm not a sort of adrenaline junkie normally. I don't do bungee jumps. I don't go on roller coasters or anything like that. But a kid arriving was like, right, there's a kid arriving in half an hour. And, you know, you tend to get as much information as they have, you know, the social worker has. So, you know, we've had kids who have literally been picked up from school or the street that have been brought to our house where the information is they're 10 and they're a boy and they're coming and nothing else. And you just think when that kid arrives, whatever age they are, however nervous you are, however anxious you might be, it can't be anything close to how they feel. And I'd say, you know, we've only fostered, I think it's, we've had eight kids who have come, and some of them have been, they've blanked, they've completely gone into themselves and gone totally introspective, almost like, this is so overwhelming, I'm just going to shut down. Mm-hmm. And we certainly had one little boy like that. He wasn't at school yet, so he was under four, and he just stared at the floor. We just assumed we thought he was autistic, but he wasn't. He was just, I cannot fathom who you are, what this is, what's going on. So, and I think if you go on those courses, they call it freezing, don't they? Mm. He just froze and stared as if I stand here stood in the middle of the kitchen, as if I stand here, nobody will know I'm here. And that was his strategy. Whereas we've had the other extreme, which is the fight, which is I'm going to F and blind and trash anything nearby. And we've only had one runner flight, which was any given opportunity, he was going to run down the road, which was quite, we managed to solve that by locking the front door. But then you do think, is this just in making the problem bounce around the house rather than maybe it'd be better if he ran, as long as I ran with him? Because then we'd get the adrenaline out. Which I've learned is another little trick that I suppose most foster carers have learned, which is if there's a lot of adrenaline in a child, do not try and squash it. Find a way for it to go somewhere. It's scary though when a kid arrives, but I guess it's worse for them.
I mean, you say scary, but it sounds like you're very enthusiastic. That's maybe a good word. Enjoy it. Yeah. You get a lot from it, and you enjoy the challenge of it.
Well, it's a strange thing, isn't it? Is there anything, this is a bit deep and metaphysical, is there anything such thing as genuinely, you know, altruistic act, or am I getting a buzz out of doing this? And probably I find when I understand one of the kids a bit more and go, oh yeah, I get why they do that now. I get why that fear about something that might seem very minor to you or to me has created such anxiety in them. It's triggered whatever it is, but that's why they're playing up, to use a sort of the euphemism. And I enjoy that detective work. I'm also I'm probably just a general optimist. So I can see when a kid, so we've had, and some people will be jealous listening to this, I'm sure, we've had now since the beginning of term, every evening, our little man has made his own packed lunch. And we've had all sorts of other conundrums going on, but every day for school, he's gone and made a packed lunch. And I'm like, this is incredible. This is brilliant. And it's been a reasonable packed lunch too. It's had fruit, veg, salmon, you know, do you know what I mean? It hasn't just been, I don't know, biscuits, crisps, lard, biscuit. Yeah, I've got all these hobnobs. I'm going to take them all to school for my friends. So you just think this is a great step in the right direction. And I look at those and go, you know, you collect them like little gold coins, put them in your pocket and go, when there's a tricky time, you know, when there's a bad night or a bad few days, and you're trying to work out what's triggered this anxiety or this behavior, you go, yeah, but you know what? We've had some good times in the past. We'll get to them again. Just might take a little while. You've got to keep an account in your head of what was good and what worked, and go, that was a beautiful moment. I'll remember that one forever.
Cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned, you gave away the end. You mentioned that you are now an adoptive parent. So how did that come about? Was that the plan? Was that a, you know?
No. We really became foster carers with no real knowledge or plan of where it would go, other than let's help children. And we were short term at first, and we did some respite, and we did a little bit of emergency, and then one little boy came into our life. I think he arrived for the day or a night, you know, one of those ones where we're not sure where this is going. And he came for a day, and I remember he arrived on a Friday afternoon. And one thing I tried to do is, if a child was arriving and it was the right sort of time of day, I tried to be outside with a jet washer washing the car. And I just thought, right, when this kid arrives, he's going to be nervous, you know, it's what's going on, you come to the stranger's house. But if you're outside, you know, we haven't got a driveway, so it was on the street, and I was jet washing this car, and the social worker I knew, and I just said to this little boy, hey, do you reckon you could have a go with this? And I've done this a few times before. He went, oh yeah. And so within a minute, he's blasting the car, blasting the pavement, sending up mud everywhere. I mean, who doesn't want to use a jet washer? How old was he? 6 and a half. So he's making a right mess. Oh, brilliant. And then my wife's trying to do the paperwork, you know, with the social worker inside. And I have no idea about half the paperwork, because I'm more the jet washing than I am signing stuff. You know, we've got a good division there. And he came in, this little boy, and we had a honeymoon period of a few weeks of him doing everything he could to go, you know, I've done this, is it good? Do you like me? I've done this, do you like me? Almost sort of flirtatious, almost, I suppose. And then we had a tough time when he started to push the boundaries. He started to be, you know, difficult, you know, do you really like me? Do you really go on? Oh, all right, let's see how, I mean, I don't think this is obviously not conscious, yeah, but it's like, you know, let's go 2 in the morning. Let's see if you like me now, because I'm going to come and, I don't know, throw a car at your head or something like that. And I'm trying to remember the timeline, but a few years in, he was being very quiet, ominously quiet, which is never good, is it, for any child? You're like, hang on a minute, he's not bothering me or anyone else, and there's not a lot of noise. What's going on? And what he'd done, he'd come into the room I'm in now, what we call euphemistically the posh lounge, and he'd got hold of a Sharpie, you know, permanent marker, which is a terrible thing, and he got a family photo, and he'd smashed the picture up, he smashed the glass and yanked the frame off, and he so there's me and my wife and our two birth kids, our kids in it, and he added himself little kind of smiley face, and you're like, right, why do you think you've done that? And I'm, you're not trained in a psychologist role, yeah, when you foster, but you need to be, and I'm saying this about me, I know, but you need to be pretty emotionally intelligent and go, right, step back, what's this kid saying? Well, I've always believed kids in care, they want the same as everybody else. They just go about asking for it or getting it using
different strategies,
exactly. And I'm just thinking, this kid wants to be in our family. And I sort of said to him, you know, oh, what do you think this is? What's this about? And you know, you're not angry. You know, if you're angry, it's just never going to work, is it? You know, if you shout at them, and the same kid had said to me once, he goes, go on then, shout at me, do what you want. There's nothing. He looked me in the face one day, and I'm saying, I'm 6'1" and a bit overweight. And he went, there's nothing you can do to me that hasn't been done by other people. And which I found very chilling from a 6-year-old. And you thought, yeah. God, yeah, he's, you know, he's been around the block a little bit. But anyway, he did. I said, oh, what, you know, what does this mean? And he goes, I want to be in this family. And I went, oh, so just tell me a little bit more. That's a nice idea. You know, you're trying to find something neutral to say. Let him talk. Let him express himself. And he said something like, I want your dad to be my granddad. And I want your, you know, I want the other cousins to be my cousins. Basically, he wants what most people have got, which is what does Lim C say? It's the privilege of family that you can take for granted. So we just said, okay. So we spoke to the social workers and said, look, how does this work? Because he wants to be in our family. And we knew there were things called SGOs and long-term fostering and adoption. And my wife knew a lot about them because she's actually a lawyer. And so we had to think about this quite a lot because it has an awful lot of implications, not just, you know, day to day, actually, when you adopt a foster kid and he has got nowhere else to go. There's no other family. There's nobody else around for him. So we thought, yeah, day to day, this is going to work. But actually, we're going to have to do a lot of work helping him come to terms with his past, with who he is, how he fits into our family. There's also, being quite blunt, when you're a foster carer, you work for the state looking after children, you get social workers helping you. You can go, this is a looked after child, when you go somewhere, and you can kind of, not leapfrog, but you can push your way through into places where he's allowed, where a looked after child gets support, which is right. And you get financial support. We're professional foster carers on, then it works differently, doesn't it, across the country, but we were level three and we were going, right, looking after this child is going to be expensive and it's going to be difficult, and one day I will be old and infirm, and will this little man who has got some learning issues too, will he be able to live independently, or am I actually putting something on my kids that, you know, my other two kids, will they end up, you know, suddenly we've got a brother who will have to look after forever. And we tossed and turned with the idea in our head, me and my wife, and went, let's just do the right thing. And the right thing was, well, let's adopt him. And we'll have to just work out the rest as we go along. And so we told the social workers, I think the social workers probably, or there's probably somewhere, somebody's being cynical here, somebody in an office somewhere went, brilliant, that's one less kid on the looked after child register. They'd just become a previously looked after child or an ex-lack or whatever it might be. But we actually did a little bit of a deal with the council, said, look, we're going to do this. We're going to take on the responsibility of this child. We know to a penny, and we know what it means for you. It's brilliant, but are you going to help us? And we negotiated a deal with our council to help us. With post-adoption support, with some money and some other bits and pieces, which sounds very cynical, but we couldn't have carried on working, doing the jobs we were doing and taken the cut in income. It would have been, it won't work. And it is terrible. You know, it's another area, isn't it? You know, how much is it looked after? How much does it cost to look after one? And somebody somewhere tries to do the accounts, but, We adopted him. And then a few people, which is interesting, said, oh, that'll be lovely. You know, they've got this sort of really idealistic view, haven't they, that adoption solves all trauma. And then I think I blame Little Orphan Annie. They just seem to think that you go in, pick one up, she comes in and she's so happy to be with you. She sings and dances. She's got all the routines. And the other one that drives me mad is it Anne with an E? So Anne of Green Gables. Oh, she's such. And you're thinking, where are these? Well, I mean, you know, he's gorgeous, but where? He didn't come in singing and dancing back from court once we adopted him. And we had another bit of a honeymoon period, and then he really put us through it to test us again, to see is this for real? Are you really gonna trust? Can I trust you? Can I trust you to meet my needs? And I know particularly there was a time after Christmas and he was being so difficult. And I mean, you know, I know we've all been there, you know, many of us have been there, be thinking, you know, and you know, that classic one when people with birth kids go, oh, all kids do that. They go, they don't. At 4 in the morning, you're Your 9-year-old probably doesn't scream in your face that you're an effing effer and he's going to stab you and all, you know, all the other stuff that I think sometimes comes with the territory, not always. But we just stuck it out. We just stuck in there and went, we're not going to give up on you. And we turned the corner. And
I mean,
God, that was hard.
I mean, you're an optimist, it was hard. So you...
Yeah.
Right, but... But it was hard. In the morning, that's hard.
Yeah, 4 o'clock, and when it's been several 4 o'clocks, that's hard. That's hard, and this is when you get good advice and good wisdom from other foster carers and adopters. And we've got very good friends of adopted who are several years down the path from us, and I like to hope that I can talk to other people who foster and adopt and go, hey, we learned this. Mm. We found this was the case, and we had some very good friends who went, what is it? What time of year is it? Is there anything? Is there a trigger? Is there a smell? And it was January, and we had enough information about his records, if you like, to know that January was when he'd been removed from a place that he possibly considered safe. So you're thinking, oh, hang on a minute, let's think about this. Christmas tree's gone down, Christmas lights have gone down, we've had New Year, presents have gone away, it's cold, it's dark, it's damp. That maybe is the trigger. And as an optimist, I went, let's just get through to the weekend when it's a bit lighter. Let's get through to the end of January when the sun will shine a bit more. Let's get through. And we didn't look forward for a month or 6 months. We just looked forward to the next day, and it gradually got better. He got less aggressive and less angry, and he just began to calm down basically. And every now and again we have another wobble and he'll get angry about something, but we'll go, ah, this is nothing like the famous January of whatever it was, 2000 and somewhere, when we were living in a, you know, in that environment where, you know, I've read about it now, he thinks, did I have secondary trauma or some sort of very mild PTSD where going home to your own house to be sworn at is difficult. And, you know, when I talk about fostering, I don't veer away, and adoption, don't veer away from this. It might happen to you. You know, you might get that. You might not. It might be dead easy. But our son, he needed to know if it was safe and if he could be himself. And other sort of mad things we did, because bedtime was such a contentious issue. I just said, and I am a little bit, what's that word? Is it called blue sky thinking, where you have mad ideas where people go, what are you doing that for? And I just said to my wife, right, bedtime is scrapped. We're not doing it. And my wife said, what do you mean? And I went, right, now he can go to bed when he wants. I think he was 9, 10. And I went, we'll say it's bedroom time. And he has to go to his bedroom, but we won't say has to. He'll go to his bed, all right, bedroom time, and we'll give him an iPad. We'll give him any food he wants, because these are the areas where we're having these battles, and we'll see what happens. And it was like, well, my wife was a bit like, this is mad. And I go, have you got a better idea? Because what we're doing isn't working. And she went, all right. And so we just used to load up TV programs on an iPad. We didn't just give him, you know, here's the internet, see you in the morning. And the funny thing is, he really liked watching, the dumping ground about the residential care home. He loved Tracy McKenna, and you'd back up loads of them on an iPad and go, what snacks you want? And he'd normally go, you know, the cheap noodles, 4 packs for a pound, white bread, Nutella, classic fodder for a kid that's been through a degree of neglect. And you just go, right, I'm going to bed. You can watch this as long as you want, and here's your food, and I'll see you later. We didn't even say see you in the morning, see you later. And we used to go to bed, and he would fall asleep when he'd had enough, and he'd get up in the morning and he'd go to school, and he was functioning quite happily. And we basically removed we would try and put him to bed, say at 8, and by midnight you were still fighting. And what we instead did was gave him an iPad and food at about 9, and then we didn't see him till the morning. So as far as we were concerned, the evening had stopped being a battleground. So we were able to go to sleep without our own adrenaline being sky high from shouting and screaming. And it was one of those things that I was like, we better not tell many people this is our parenting style, because they'll go, that's ridiculous. And I'm like, but we're still here, and so's he. So it's worked. And when I chat about this occasionally with, you know, other adopters, you meet them online or you go to a meet or jam, I'm part of a sort of network called Home for Good, I go, have you thought about completely ripping up your parenting book and doing something different? And when I sort of explain what we do, people say, yeah, but won't he? And I go, well, how's your way working? Oh, my way isn't working at all. It's just confrontation after confrontation. I go, well, you've got nothing to lose. Give it a go.
Yeah.
And certainly with this little fella, this little man, his resilience, his physical resilience is such that actually he can be on an iPad, because you can see how long he's been watching. And so you can see in the morning, you go, God, he used 67% of the battery. That means he must have fallen asleep at 2 a.m. But he's still got up at 7:30 for school, and he's functioned quite happily. And you're thinking, just maybe there's something about his physiology, his adrenaline, that he can do that. And this idea of you need to behave and in this certain way, you need to go to bed at this time and eat this food, for him, it's not true. It just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But has that put you at odds with sort of perhaps your peers, your family, who kind of look into your life and sort of think, what's going on there?
It's difficult. Our birth kids are older, okay? So they just sort of go, yeah, I mean, now and again. So my daughter would go, oh, you know, he's had a tough time, so the rules are different. My son is a little bit like, hang on a minute, how come when I was that age, I couldn't get away with that? And you go, the rules are different. You're looking for markers, aren't you? You're looking for things that have changed. So, you know, when a kid is really losing it, you know, and you think there's no way this kid's going to calm down, you can't out shout them, out scream them or whatever, you can't give them a big enough deterrent, it just won't work, they've lost it. And for number three, I knew we'd really begun to crack it when he was having a bit of a paddy, a meltdown, and he was stomping around the house, and we basically, me and my wife, just keep out of the way, let it burn out. And he was stomping upstairs, and he was going to stomp into the bathroom, and my son was coming out, who must have been 15, and he's quite a big lad, and kid number three was really seeing the red mist, and then he was just about to push past my son number two, who was significantly older and larger. He stopped, stood out of the way, and let my son Jamie out of the bathroom. And I just thought, you've just shown that you can modify your behavior.
You can control it.
That to me, that's a golden moment, because you know, and it's right that this is, I think it's good that you can have a rant at me and mum, and we will just go, okay, and we'll try and modify and placate. Whereas another bigger boy, my son, if he'd have had a go at my other son would have held his face with his big hand and gone, I'm bigger than you, you're littler than me. The rules are, if you push me around, I will batter you. This is a local word for, you know, I'm not advocating violence, I'm just saying that this is the way of the world. And
yeah,
son number three needs to know that you can't throw your weight around, because the problem is, if you learn to throw your weight around, eventually a very big person comes around and shows you that you can't. And if you're lucky, it's the police, and you go to prison. And if you're unlucky, it's a bigger gangster, and then you know you get put in hospital. And I just saw that as a golden moment. And my wife was like, oh, he's got a massive cub on today. And I went, yeah, but guess what, he controlled it, because he backed down when a bigger boy came past him. And I just thought, what a great moment. From peers and friends, it is a bit odd, because sometimes they'll, you know, other kids will say to their parents, how come he's allowed to do that and get away with it? So, and I'm afraid that's just tough. And maybe I'm a little bit, again, it's that sense of justice that maybe carers, foster carers, adopters have, of like going, you know, and I don't see myself as a traditional adopter, you know, we've come about this via a different route of going, I'm afraid your kid needs to know that not every kid has had the same background, and that the rules are different sometimes. And actually, our family's, massive credit to them, have accepted this and gone, oh, that's a bit different from, you know, my parents, you know, they're in their 70s and 80s. They've been great at going, okay, so we'll just let you deal with this how you want to deal with it. Like, yep, just keep out of the way and we'll deal with it. And it might shock you And when it comes to, I don't know, all eating at a table, he gets to take, certainly not so much now, but he gets to take everything he wants and puts it on his plate. And we don't say, you'll never eat all that, or gosh, you're taking more than you need, because we've never been where he's been. So the, you know, the overloading of the plate, he actually doesn't do it anymore. But we just said, let it go. It's not worth having a fight. And believe me, if he takes it, if he needs to put some in his pockets and take it upstairs and hide it, we know it'll rot. We know it'll be horrible. And we know that he doesn't need to. But of course, he actually thinks he does, or he did, because he's known a starvation and a malnutrition, and he's known that, and we never have. So how can we possibly judge? But we have been massively fortunate, blessed, whatever, with families that go, yeah, okay, you know what you're doing. It looks mad, but we'll let you go with it. A bit awkward when he swears at my dad, but he doesn't do it very often.
So what does the future look like for you? Have you continued to foster, or are you?
Well, our house is technically full, although we did a private fostering for a little while with a young lady that we knew personally, and she had nowhere to go. It's like, oh, she's got to be better on our sofa for a few weeks than, you know, in the care system. And we were able to help her, because, yeah, you know, you learn how the system works. So we were able to get her into supported lodgings and help her, and she could come round here for lunch on Saturdays, Sundays, when there was nothing going on there. And I don't know whether we will foster again. So technically, our house is full. Our bedrooms are full. My daughter is meant to be going to university next year. And actually, all the kids have said, oh, if that means there's a spare room, maybe we could foster again. We'll have to see how that goes. I still feel that it's quite a lot to contend with what we've got, and that the care needed for the children we do have is enough to keep us busy. And I, you know that story of, you know, I know, like in Liverpool, last week there was 1,508 kids in care. And the number in the country is going up in it. And you can be overwhelmed with the need. You can be overwhelmed with, oh, there's so many. We need to take more. If only we could do this, and only we could do that. And you just think, I just come back to this, a very famous story of a bunch of, starfish washed up on the beach. And there's a little boy, and he picks up one, and he takes it down to the water, and it swims off. And then he gets another one, he takes it down to the sea and lets it swim off. And some old fella comes by and says, oh, there's tons of starfish on this beach. There's thousands, there's millions. You'll never save them all. And the little boy goes, no, but I can save this one. And that's a start. And I sort of feel very much that we're doing okay with what we've got. And the impact of what we're doing is forever. That, you know, that we're going to change this little kid's direction. When I find out a smidgen, I don't really know a tiny amount about his parents, his family situation, you think, oh, they should be in care too. They should have been in care. If only we could have broken the cycle of abuse and neglect. And they weren't bad people. They just didn't know how to look after their own children. And so you just think, right, let's hope we've broken that cycle. I mean, he's not going to leave at 18. Another advantage of being adopted over fostered is he will stay in our house until he's ready to go. There's no cliff edge where, right, and that's it. You've had your time. You're off the council's payroll. Go into a hostel. And away you go. He's like, no, your bedroom is here. Your house is here. You have family, friends dotted about across the country, even the globe. And, you know, go and explore, but go and stay with people that we know are safe.
Yeah. Well, Phil, thank you so much for your time. And it's been your enthusiasm and kind of optimism are just quite inspiring. So thank you so much for your time, and look after yourself.
Yeah, you too, mate. All right. Cheers. Thanks very much. I'll see you later, bye-bye. Mate. Ciao then. Bye.